Let's kick it off. Good morning. It's a wonderful day in Oregon. Blue skies all day, high of 80. This is the Joint Ways and Means Subcommittee on Education. We have just a little bit of change in our agenda, and House Bill 2870 will not be heard today. It's not quite ready. And so we will just share the order so you're not left hanging. The first thing we'll hear is Senate Bill 213, and then we will move to the public hearing and possible work session on Senate Bill 612, and then to House Bill 2728. And our last bill, depending upon how fast we go, hopefully we'll just this will all be smooth sailing today. It's Senate Bill 113. Anybody need me to repeat that on the panel on the committee? Good. I would have had to have you repeat it several times. Okay, Senator Monroe, you're ready.
Well,
to go?
I'm just trying to get my computer going here. I need.
Yeah, it's taken me a minute this morning too.
Too fast.
Pardon?
There we go. That's what I need. Madam Co-Chair, fire away.
Okay. I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 213 relating to early learning hubs. And Doug, let's hear it.
Madam Chair, Senate Bill 213, you had a public hearing a week or two ago. This is a bill that deals with the early learning hubs. It requires the Early Learning Council to develop metrics. It provides that the Early Learning Council and the Early Learning Division may require hubs to provide a local match, provides that the council has the authority to basically be the hub for those areas of the states that don't have an organized hub. I believe the entire state now is covered, so that's not an issue at this point in time. It requires an annual report, and it also requires an ongoing evaluation of the hubs, which provides the fiscal impact of this bill at $120,000 a biennium for that evaluation. That money is built into the Department of Education budget, which you will see tomorrow or Monday or Tuesday, depending on if the paperwork gets approved. So there are no amendments to this bill, and if there's any questions on it, I am here, as well as Megan Irwin is in the back of the room if there are any technical or in-depth questions.
I don't know if she got sent to the corner for a reason.
She's hiding in the corner back there. I don't know.
Questions for Mr. Wilson. Senator Smith Warner, yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and may I just say that I'm flattered every time you co-chairs give me that promotion. So thank you. I'm not sure if this is a question for now or once the motion is made, but I did have a comment kind of just about the general operation of the hubs. So I've done some talking to some folks involved with and gotten a lot of good feedback on them. And I think I just wanted to say for the record that, I'm a great believer in the system. I think it's a great idea. And just to make the point specifically that the role of the hubs is not intended to be providers of the services that they are facilitating. And just to kind of reinforce that on the record, that is the certainly the intent of the legislature and the legislation, that they are facilitating bodies and not providing bodies.
Yep. Good job. Thank you. Any other comments before we take a motion? Mr. Co-Chair.
Madam Co-Chair, I would move Senate Bill 213 to the full Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Monroe has moved Senate Bill 213 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Was it as amended?
No, that is a mistake on my part.
Okay.
There is no amendment.
Okay. Any further discussion? Any objections? Motion carries. And Julie will have Representative Springer marked as absent. Carriers. Early learning hubs. Okay, Representative Smith Warner, you want to carry it to the House?
Thank you.
Okay.
Senator Roblin. full
and
to the Senate.
Okay. We haven't closed this yet, so Representative Springer, would you like to vote on Senate Bill 213?
Yes, please.
Yes, and your vote is?
Yes.
Aye. Okay, thank you so much. And I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 213.
Madam Chair, I'm going to step out for the rest of the meeting, and we have very talented Krista here to take my place. But on terms of sort of the logistics, there will be a meeting tomorrow. It's posted for 10:30, or it will be either 10:30, the later of 10:30, or whenever a few minutes after full committee is done. As of now, there are four bills on the agenda, plus another one that was not quite ready for prime time this morning. So okay. I believe they're all work sessions. So it should go rather quick, and I don't think any of them have any that I can see having significant issues. So we'll try to get done as soon as you can and do plan for full agendas on Monday and Tuesday at least also.
Okay.
Madam Co-Chair?
Yes, Mr. Co-Chair.
Mr. Wilson, will that be in this room?
Yes, it will. I'm assuming it will, yeah.
Okay. So tomorrow after the full Ways and Means Committee, about approximately 10:30.
Come on down here. And we'll
yeah. Okay. Hustle thank you, out. Mr. Wilson. Okay. I'm going to open a public hearing and a possible work session on Senate Bill 612 relating to dyslexia. And Krista, if you'll give us the background, and then we'll check on our witness list.
Sure thing. Okay. Senate Bill 612 requires the Oregon Department of Education to establish a state dyslexia specialist, to create a plan to screen for dyslexia and provide notifications for students at risk for dyslexia. And beginning January 1st, 2018, school districts are required to ensure that at least one kindergarten through grade 5 teacher in each school district has received training related to dyslexia. The measure has a $190,592 general fund impact for one position, 0.75 FTE in the 2015-17 biennium. We have two amendments online. There's an A8, which is makes some policy changes, and then the A9 is the LFO recommended amendment, which contains the same policy as the A8 amendment. However, it strikes language that permits the Department of Education to fund positions from the Network of Quality Teaching and Learning, the NQTL fund, and then it also appropriates the money for the position.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for Krista before we start testimony? Okay. This is our good Representative Taylor's bill, and Senator Rowland, do you want to testify
for both
also?
Of us, yeah. But,
okay, if you both would. Oh, I prefer if you went to the dais
okay.
or the testimony table.
Didn't work.
Those chairs are fun to play with,
no,
aren't
I
they?
I love that chivalry's not dead.
Okay.
On the coast of Oregon.
That's right.
Right.
612.
Madam Co-Chair.
Dyslexia.
Members of the committee. Kathleen Taylor, State Representative, House District 41. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today about Senate Bill 612 with the -9 amendment pertaining to dyslexia. Dyslexia is a specific learning disability that is characterized by difficulties with word recognition and by poor spelling and decoding abilities. Secondary consequences include problems with reading comprehension and a reduced reading experience that can impede the growth of vocabulary and background knowledge. Research conducted by the National Institute of Health indicates that as many as 1 in 5 individuals struggle with dyslexia and related learning disabilities. Dyslexia is a major and widespread problem. Specifically, Senate Bill 612, as amended, will require the Oregon Department of Education provide school districts with resources and support to assist students with dyslexia, their parents, and teachers. Oregon Department of Education, in conjunction with TSPC, will develop lists of training opportunities for teachers. Oregon Department of Education will develop a plan for screening students. and requires school districts to have training a dyslexia specialist by January 1, 2018, and funding for these activities will come from the Network of Quality Teaching and Learning portion of the budget. There are also several pages dealing with various effective dates and timelines. I'm told the material with the OEIB / Department of Education are technical, dealing with sunset clauses. Section 7 is for the OEIB current status. Section 8 applies after the OEIB sunset has expired. As my constituent, Jen Capalanga, who's here today, and the advocates at Decoding Dyslexia can personally attest, one of the key factors to helping our students with dyslexia have become successful in school is early detection. Studies have shown that when intervention is delayed until third grade, approximately 74% of children will continue to have difficulty learning to read through high school. We had powerful testimony in the Senate Education Committee from parents, students, teachers, also Senator Roblin, who's carrying the bill with me, doing the bill with me, and Representative Hoyle about dyslexia. I urge your support for Senate Bill 612.
Thank you, Representative. Senator?
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Arnie Roblin, Senate District 5, Oregon Coast. So in my family, my immediate family, there are three boys, of which I am one, and all of us have dyslexia. I have two sisters, neither of which have dyslexia. So, and if you go to dyslexia classrooms, you will see a few more boys than females. You know, we've had the knowledge of what to do for a long time, but schools have and education programs have not really talked specifically about kinds of methods that really work. And I'm going to talk more about my brother. I had a ridiculous elementary school because I couldn't spell, couldn't read, and that's what people do in elementary school. And for me, it changed dramatically when I went into middle school, and there's some good research that indicates that brain changes that happen in puberty sometimes help. And for me, I went from the lowest level classes to advanced classes within the 2 years, 3 years of middle school. And I didn't look back. It was good. It was not as easy as it was for some of my friends, and I tested things out differently. But I was able to transition and become a reasonably good student and go on. One of my younger brothers, we have a spread-out family. So he came to live with my wife and I when I was in college at the University of Washington, Seattle, because Renton, Washington had a program called the Orton-Gillingham Method of Teaching, and they had basically a whole school that was just full of kids with learning disabilities. And so it was amazing to go into a classroom and look at 25 kids, all of whom were like my brother, who was also ADHD, so sitting at a desk was not easy for him. And it was amazing for a person who was becoming a teacher to watch these teachers who had these skills. Kids wrote on each other's backs. They did a lot of physical stuff with respect to learning what letters were like and all that kind of stuff. And for people who think that dyslexia is this reverse, you know, if it was just that, I'd just reverse it and know what it was. But the reality is it doesn't do that. It just doesn't make any sense when you look at a page of writing. And I still, if I get myself too tense, have that problem. But my brother, it was remarkable because at the end of his first grade year, he had ulcers and he couldn't figure out why he couldn't know because he was just as smart as everybody else. Actually, tested IQ was really, really high. But he couldn't figure out the system and he couldn't get anywhere. And it was horrible to watch this young person just so tense about going to school. So we moved from, I was going to the University of Washington, we moved to Renton because they had this program. My mother sent my brother over to live with us, and he went to this special school. And within a year, they had changed his life. It would have been great if he could have stayed there. We were getting ready to graduate. My mother didn't have the resources to do that, so we went back. But they gave him the skills in that 1 year to survive school. He didn't flourish in school, which I think he could have done, but he survived, and he graduated, and he was given the skills with that 1 year on how to organize his life, how to do the kinds of things, how to actually start understanding what words are. And he has breakthroughs even today in his 50s where he'll start being able to read differently and things, and he keeps working at it. He's had a very difficult life, and I attribute that difficult life to not really being able to compete where his brain thinks he should be and his ability to do things are. And he had a number of years of that training. So we're here today because we have a bill that is going to, I think, this was over 40 years ago that schools were already doing this. And we've never implemented truly a program. People resist that in schools because it's pretty specific what you have to do with these kids. And if you haven't had the experience, you don't understand the reason to do it. And I think we finally got to the point where we now have enough people who are saying that we've done enough damage to kids over the years. So here's a bill that will say, Department of Ed, get that specialty. Every school, you need to have somebody trained. And that's really what this bill is about, getting someone in every school that really understands there are direct methods of instruction that can change kids' lives. And if it's done early, they have a chance. And in my brother's case, 1 year in elementary allowed him to succeed for the next 11, albeit not at the level I think he would have been able to succeed if he had more. So with that, good luck with our decision.
Thank you. questions for our two members of our committee and people that know these situations well. Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick comment. Like Senator Roblin, for those of us that have had family members that have struggled with this, it's a shame we didn't get this done 30, 40 years ago or whatever, but now's the time.
Right.
Good. Okay. Well, thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
And we welcome you back to the dais. And we have four people that want to testify on this bill. We have Elizabeth Schrodoff and Teresa Sorensen. We'll have you first and then our other two people.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Mr. Co-Chair, and members of the subcommittee. I'm Elizabeth Skorohodov. I'm a teacher in Portland Public Schools, kindergarten. I graduated with my master's in 2009, so I have a recent education degree, a degree in education. And when I left my master's, I felt like I was prepared to reach all kids. And what I learned very quickly is that I had no idea how to help kids, identify kids, or even help parents who asked me about dyslexia. I had no idea. My training had not prepared me for that. It was years into my teaching that I had a co-teacher give me information on the warning signs of dyslexia, and it opened my eyes. And I realized, oh my gosh, all these students that were frustrating me because I couldn't help them, and now I know they were struggling with something else. They were struggling with something bigger. And I was thinking about one specific student that teachers would share how they were so frustrated. He couldn't write, he couldn't read, he was ADHD, and I worked with him and I tried my best, and he couldn't even tie his shoes in fourth grade. And after my eyes were opened, I thought, oh my gosh, how many years have we been failing that? That child has to be dyslexic. And so through having my eyes opened, I said, I have to do something about this. It opened my eyes to my own children, and I looked into tutoring programs. I started doing tutoring with my own children, and I was amazed at what I was learning, and I was just, it was beautiful to see my daughter say one day, wow, Mom, why didn't they teach me this in kindergarten? And my thought was, they did teach you this in kindergarten. You just couldn't understand it the way it was presented to you. So since then, I've been on my own pursuit of knowledge when it comes to dyslexia. And as a kindergarten teacher, I'm really excited to be able to present information the first time to these young learners in a multisensory way. My frustration is there isn't any training out there that I knew of to help myself know how to do this as an educator. And I wasn't being provided with it through the district. I did finally find a training, just a one-day training on the Orton-Gillingham method for the general ed teacher. And I left there last, I think it was in January, just inspired, and I have to get fully trained in this. I just have to get fully trained in it. I started going back to my classroom and trying to apply what I had been learning in the tutoring program and then what I had learned in that one training. And I saw my students that were struggling readers, one that although they won't currently test until second grade, I know he's dyslexic, it runs in his family, he has all the signs, and he was starting to shrink in the classroom. He wouldn't raise his hand, and he would just kind of hide and become part of the carpet. When I started applying some of these strategies to him, to the whole class, he started sitting up taller, he started volunteering, he started raising his hand, and he started blurting, Mrs. S, that's a diagraph, there's a diagraph, that's a blend. And I'm like, oh my gosh. He was so excited about his new knowledge. He had ownership of something. And it made me excited to learn even more about how I could help this child and help the whole classroom at the same time, because they all learn this way. They can all learn this way. And that actually makes it more fun and more interesting, and it's differentiated, which is what we're all good teachers are supposed to be able to do. So like my kindergarten student, I have been yelling at the top of my lungs, hey, pay attention to this. We need to do this in general ed classroom. I did a professional development for the teachers in my school about dyslexia, and I had teachers with 15 plus years experience afterwards asking me questions. How do I know about more about this? Oh my gosh, I think I have a student in my classroom that's struggling with that. What do I do? What do I do? And I had to do research. They want to know how to do the screenings. They want to do something. They just don't have the tools, and they don't have anybody to help them get there. And so I know that teachers want the best for every single student. And I'm really hoping that through this bill, we can start providing a pathway to getting at least those elementary grades, the teachers being able to teach them in a multisensory way, because these kids are so smart and they're just not given a chance to show us how smart they really are. And I don't want to see any more shrinking. I want to see them yell at the top of their lungs, I know that diagraph. So anyway, thank you very much for your time. If you have any questions.
Elizabeth, I wish my children had you for a teacher. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Tressa.
Good morning, Madam Chair, Mr. Co-Chair, members of the subcommittee. My name is Teresa Sorensen, and I live in Happy Valley. I'm the parent of two dyslexic children who have very different stories. My older daughter, Lillian, struggled through kindergarten with the beginning skills that are required to learn to read. She had difficulty recognizing letters and applying the correct sound to them. Her spelling was rudimentary and her handwriting was illegible. Even though these are warning signs for dyslexia, her teachers encouraged us to wait and see, telling me that it was too early to screen for dyslexia and that my daughter was too smart to be dyslexic. As she progressed into first and second grade, we continued to raise our concerns for dyslexia with her teachers, and Lillian continued to fall behind, until one teacher finally admitted to me that my daughter had not fallen far enough behind to qualify for any kind of testing or intervention through the school system, and that it could be years before she did, because she is very smart and had learned to compensate. We waited on a waiting list for 5 months and paid $1,200 to have her privately evaluated by a licensed clinical psychologist. And although she was in the spring of her second grade year, she tested at a beginning first grade reading level, and all of her diagnostic tests were consistent with dyslexia. Because her teachers couldn't, and the school district wouldn't help my daughter, I learned how to tutor her myself with a style of Orton-Gillingham tutoring. Lillian and I have spent over 400 hours working to close the gap and maintain her reading above grade level. My proudest moments are when I catch her reading just for fun. Sorry. And I wish I could go back in time and erase those years of daily homework and reading struggles that left her feeling stupid and unable to relate to her peers. Dyslexia has a very strong genetic component, and at the time of Lillian's evaluation, my younger son, Nate, was 5.5. We considered his warning signs, which were very dramatic, and included late speech development. He often mixed up syllables within a word, and he had a hard time with the concept of rhyme. I started tutoring him at the same time that I started working with his sister, and he's learned to read solely through this method. We had him privately evaluated at the beginning of his first grade year, and he tested at a mid-second grade reading level, a year and a half above his grade level. Unfortunately, my son Nate is a rarity, a dyslexic who reads above grade level and who has no idea what it feels like to be behind, to struggle, or be ashamed. There's no reason why all dyslexic kids can't be like Nate. Sorry, identified early and supplied with appropriate evidence-based intervention before they fall behind. I hope you'll consider our story and the future of 20% of Oregon's children with your support for Senate Bill 612. Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Co-Chair?
Yes, Mr. Co-Chair.
North Clackamas School District?
Yes, thank you. Yes.
Okay.
Are you going to take care of that?
I represent a chunk of North Clackamas School District. I'll yell at them a little bit.
Well, Senator, you get, you know, better results with, you know, sugar and honey than lemonade.
Oh, okay.
Senator Roblin. How to start, huh?
Yeah. Your kids have a big chance because you're parents that care and understand and will work with them. And so as a kid that didn't have a great experience in elementary school, and I did was able to get successful, I still can't spell, but I do want to tell you that your kids have a really big chance, and the hard part is those others that don't. And there's nothing that will replace parents being parents and letting their kids know that they believe in them, they trust them, and that they know that they're smart. My dad took me in the garage every weekend because he was a carpenter and we built things. And I know that that's why later on in my life I was more successful in math and other things than a lot of people were, because I had some relationships to do it. We do need to fix our schools so they understand, and this is a time-tested program, but recognize your kids have a special person there. And in all cases, parents are the most important for our kids. So thank you for sharing, because it is, my mother fought this her whole life, because all of us, but she also gave us all the things that we needed to be successful. And I, from your testimony, both of you, I hear that coming loud and clear, so.
And thank you. What I'm curious is if you put all this, your skills and ability on your Facebook page, so now you could train other parents. So
I actually tutor. I volunteer at my child's school with other students who can't afford tutoring themselves.
What a gift. What an absolute gift. And your children will... Yeah, as now a great grandmother, they will appreciate every step that you've taken. So thank you. Thank both of you. Oh, Senator?
Yeah,
yes.
I just want to put one thing out there on the record. After our Senate hearing in education, one of my teachers called because his grandson was in the meeting. He was in a different room, and his mother was there, who was an old student of mine. They weren't in the action. There was a lot of people that came, so there was a separate room. And he called and said, "Why didn't you tell me?" Because his son, who was one of the first people killed in Afghanistan when we first went in, he was a navigator, but had trouble all the time. And for the first time, as a teacher, he understood in a different way, and he felt really bad that he had not understood this, that he hadn't had the opportunity as a high school teacher to know, and including his kid, because his kid was another one who was very bright, and so always ahead of the level, even though internally he was having a hard time. And he said for the first time in that hearing, his daughter and him and the family came to an understanding of something that they hadn't realized, and he probably would have changed his teaching style. I mean, he was a good teacher, but he said, "I never had that understanding, and that was my own child." And it's really tough on people. Hard moment for him to recognize what he could have or would have done had it been offered to him, but didn't know. And I said, "You cannot hold yourself responsible for things you don't know, but." Hopefully you can be part of the group that helps us change.
Thank you. Thank both of you so much for taking your time today. So I think you might be on vacation. School's out.
First day.
it never ends for those that continue to give. So thank you. Okay, we have Theo Matthews and Jennifer Capilloni. Uh-oh, Theo, are you going to make us cry?
No.
Okay.
Hi, my name is Theo Matthews with one T. I'm 11 years old. I go to Creative Science School in Portland. I have dyslexia. Because teachers at my school don't understand dyslexia, I have to do tutoring at my house 3 days a week at night. And now I even have to do tutoring 4 days a week during the summer, which I strongly don't like. I wish teachers knew how to teach me the same way my tutor does, so I could learn at school instead of at home. When I tutor at home, I can't do other activities that I would rather be doing. Sometimes having dyslexia makes me feel stupid, dumb, and frustrated about my reading, writing, and spelling skills. I'm embarrassed to let other kids see my writing, and I know there are other kids at my school who aren't getting the help they need. Some parents don't even know that their kid needs special help, and that is why I think this bill should pass, and I want all kids to get the help that they need. Thank you.
Thank you, Theo. And so what's your favorite thing that you like to do instead of studying?
Probably watching TV.
that's okay. Representative Springer?
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair.
Yeah, Theo, don't leave yet. You're going to be a start.
You are, like, really super cute. So my son had to tutor one whole summer, mm-hmm. and he said it sucked, and he didn't like it. He was cranky about it. And then when he got to high school, he took an advanced placement class, and he's graduating. He's heading to a university, and he had some times just like you where he said, why are we doing this? I can't learn, and I'm dumb. And he wasn't, and it took him getting past that to figure out that he could take advanced classes, one, in high school and go to a university. So sounds like you're on that very same track.
And what grade are you, Theo?
I'm going to be going into sixth grade.
Already?
That's the year, wow. The summer he studied, or tutored.
Rep. Taylor.
Thank you, Co-Chair Kemp. I'm so impressed by you. It takes a lot of courage to come down here and do this. And you know what? I get so nervous when I have to testify. And I get paid to do this. Not a lot, but I do get paid. And so I have to have something written out, even as a grown-up. And I have to have it all figured out before I say it. I'm just so impressed that you came all the way down here. And you're about the same age as I have a child in the eighth grade and in the fourth grade. And I'm just so impressed and proud of you for doing this. And so thank you so much for sharing your story.
Yeah, thank you.
Any other comments? Senator Roblin?
I just wanted to point out to her, it's nice that you can write it out.
Yes.
Some of us have a really hard time doing that. So we have learned not to do that. I'm very impressed. I do want to tell you that spelling was one of my hardest, too, as a dyslexic kid. And so my teachers tried to be helpful. So my whole fifth grade, we had spelling bees. We had to sign it, line up in the line, and sometimes they would let teachers pick them, so I was always the last one picked because they knew. And the teachers decided they would give me the same word every day, every time, thinking that would help. So I hate squirrels to this day because I cannot spell that word. And it was so frustrating. I knew they were going to ask. I knew I'd studied it the night before, and I knew I was going to mess up. So I got to sit down early, but eventually it worked out really, really well. So recognize this is not something that holds you back. It's something that makes it harder for you, but you can make it. And after your wonderful summer of tutoring, it'll be so much fun later. So thanks.
Thank you, Theo. And if you want to, you can stay there while your friend testifies, or you can go back to your chair.
Okay,
thank you. And Jennifer.
Good morning, Madam Chair, Mr. Co-Chair, and members of the subcommittee. My name is Jennifer Capalonga. Thank you for the opportunity to speak about Senate Bill 612 today. I'm testifying on behalf of Decoding Dyslexia Oregon. Decoding Dyslexia Oregon is part of a national movement of parents and educators. We're working to ensure students with dyslexia receive the resources they need to be successful in school. In Oregon, we have two chapters, over 2,000 members, and are growing rapidly. We were the fifth state to join the movement 3 years ago, and now all 50 states have chapters. We hear daily from teachers who are concerned for their students. They recognize that their best efforts fail to reach a portion of their students, and they come to learn that those students oftentimes exhibit the signs and symptoms and learning profiles of students with dyslexia. We hear daily from parents who are struggling to find appropriate education for their students. Some of our parents provide, at great expense, private instruction for their students so that they do not experience lifelong illiteracy. We have others, parents, who cannot afford that, and this is an equity issue. Dyslexia is a neurological condition that runs in families. Recent research from the National Institutes of Health tells us it's about 1 in 5 who experience dyslexia. In Oregon public schools, that's about 112,000 people. However, special education, general education, and reading teachers are not trained and receive no professional development on how to reach these students. Consequently, students with dyslexia rarely read on par with their grade level peers, and they experience substance abuse, dropout, and much higher levels of incarceration. Thank you for letting me talk about why this is important to our families. Having just one teacher in a school trained on how to identify and teach a student with dyslexia means that children in that school can finally begin to receive the free appropriate education that they deserve. Senate Bill 612 will also ensure that Oregon will create a screening plan to catch dyslexia no later than first grade. When implemented, we'll move away from our wait to fail system to a more effective early intervention. Senate Bill 612 will ensure the ODE will have a dyslexia specialist to offer support to districts in relation to this bill and dyslexia, which I think is critical because our base knowledge throughout the state on dyslexia is very low. This bill is important to our students who struggle with basic literacy skills. As a trained special education teacher myself, I understand how important this bill is to our teachers. Many teachers want to teach all their students how to read and write, but haven't been taught the skills to help our children with dyslexia. And finally, this bill is important to our communities because we want all of our children to have the basic skills that they need to achieve. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and congratulations.
Thank you.
It's been a long road. You've done a great job.
Thank you.
We've met a number of times. I kept encouraging. You made it here today, so
yes.
So good job, and thanks for all your work.
Thank you.
Senator Roland.
I want to say the same thing. I am convinced we would not be here today if it had not been for you and your organization. So I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank both of you. Thank you for your time this morning. Any other discussion this morning? Okay. I did open a possible work session, but I will officially open a work session on Senate Bill 612. Senator Roblin.
Oh, I get that.
No.
I was coming by surprise. I would find it, though, if you wanted to do this.
It's not. That's my form of dyslexia.
It is.
Senator Monroe.
Madam Co-Chair, I would move the dash A9 amendment to Senate Bill 612.
A motion that the Co-Chair Monroe has moved the dash A9 amendment to Senate Bill 612. Discussion. Senator Representative Warner.
Woo. Keep getting that promotion. Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I know that there's been some back and forth between having this come out of the Network of Quality in Teaching Learning and having it be a direct appropriation, and I wondered if anyone is, perhaps staff, able to talk about that?
Sure. So, as I mentioned, with the A9 amendment, it does strike the language permitting the Department of Education to fund their position with the NQTL funds. It's a permanent position is how we're establishing it, so it's not... We didn't think it was appropriate for a permanent position to be funded with the NQTL funds.
Thank you. I was actually afraid it was just the opposite. I was going to say, for the record, as long as it's the way as long as it's the way that we'll make it, that will give it the most certainty.
It will be permanently established in the budget and will be part of the current service level when you come back in the next biennium.
Thank you.
Representative Taylor.
Thank you, Chair Kump. And just for the record, I'm slightly offended that my colleague thought that I would allow something like that to occur. But I'm going to let it slide today.
Today?
Just today, I'm going to let it slide.
Good. Any other discussion?
No.
Any objections to the motion? Motion carries. Carriers. We got to do the full motion. Okay.
Madam Co-Chair, I would move Senate Bill 612 as amended to the full Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation.
The motion by Co-Chair Monroe is to move Senate Bill 612 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation as amended. Discussion? Objections? So moved. Okay, now we have carriers. To the full, Senator Roblin. And to the floor?
I would be happy.
And Representative Taylor, if you'll carry this to the House floor, And I don't know if you want Theo to come with you. But.
I do want Theo to come with me. I'll have to talk to Tom about having him come with me. Is it possible for Representative Hoyle to be the co-carrier with
Absolutely.
Me?
Absolutely.
Okay, I think that Representative Hoyle would appreciate
that
on the House side. Thank you.
Okay. And again, the bill has passed, and so we have one from our committee, so it has to go to one more committee and then to our different chambers, and then maybe either Senator I'm going to give you the homework assignment, either Senator Roblin or Representative Taylor, Theo might even get you a signed copy of the bill.
You know, this is one of those, I don't do this often, but we asked for the governor to have a signing, and I'm sure there will be a number of those afterwards, and Representative Taylor and I can work on working out a time when it might be nice for people and the governor to sign, and some of these kids can come. It would be a great thing, I think, for this particular bill.
That would be wonderful. Thank you.
Yep.
Since school's out, he won't even have to miss school to come down and
watch
the governor
sign. Well, he might get to
bill.
Do that instead of having a tutoring session.
That's right. Hey,
that's right.
You learn to negotiate. Okay, I'm going to close the work session on Senate Bill 612 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2728. Krista. Okay.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2728 abolishes the Engineering and Technology Industry Council and creates the Oregon Talent Council within the Oregon Employment Department and establishes the Oregon Talent Council Fund. We have posted online an A4 amendment, which has a $6,112,818 general fund appropriation and a fiscal impact of two permanent positions for 1.65 FTE.
Thank you very much. Committee questions for Krista?
I have comments, but no questions.
Okay. And do we have a witness? Okay, no witnesses, nobody has signed up to testify.
You got Representative Johnson back there. I think he wants to testify.
Did he sign up? as they'd say on The Price is Right, come on down.
I'll bring Eric Maslow with me.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Co-chairs, members of committee, for the record, Mark Johnson, House District 52. Thanks so much for allowing us to have this bill here today. I think you heard in our testimony a couple days ago regarding open educational resources. Our higher ed committee was incredibly thrilled and pleased with that effort. I would put this bill probably number two, because this is a transformation in how we're going to invest targeted monies to try to create workforce and to enhance technology within the state of Oregon. And so as the administrator said, the bill represents the phase out of ETIC and the creation of the Oregon Talent Council to replace it. The thing that I'm most thankful about and excited about, I think, is that what we're doing with the Oregon Talent Council is creating an industry-led board. And I think it's very good to look at the bill and see how it describes the makeup of this board, but it says a majority of whom will be senior executives of traded sector and high-growth industries in Oregon. And I guess as we think about trying to make investments about workforce and about how we can get technology into those places where we can create the workforce that we need, who better to be making those decisions than people who themselves have demonstrated success in the private sector, that know how to not just earn a living but how to create jobs and how to be financially successful. So that's what this is about. It's a much more targeted, intentional effort than ETIC was in the past. ETIC's been very successful in the creation of some engineering programs at some of our universities. Some of us had a chance to tour the PSU engineering building prior to watching the Starlight Parade in downtown Portland a few weeks ago, and that was fascinating. But the dean of the engineering school there clearly said that ETIC was a major contributor to putting some of the professors and very, very bright people in place there, to where they now have over 3,000 students enrolled in their engineering school at PSU each year, and that's a huge milestone. So this is much more targeted, though. It's going to allow these very smart, very capable people to make targeted targeted investments, not just in the metro area, but all over the state of Oregon in a variety of capacities, not just regarding technology, high-tech type stuff, but perhaps in healthcare research, biomedical research, a lot of new burgeoning industries that just need a little push and a little bit of nurturing to get this next wave of entrepreneurs and businesses off the floor. So that's really what it's about. And I'll just pass off to Eric Meslow, who is himself one of these very smart, successful tech people in Oregon. He's been an instrumental part of ETIC, and he will hopefully also play a key role within Oregon Talent Council as well. So thank you, Madam Chair and committee members.
Thank you, Representative.
Co-Chair Monroe, Co-Chair Comp, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Eric Meslow. I'm from Tualatin, Oregon. My company and my residence are both located there. I am also the current chair of ETIC, the Engineering Technology Industry Council, sit on the board of the Technology Association of Oregon, and are members of the OBA and the PNDC. This bill has been a long time coming, about 4 years we've been working on this. I've been the chair of ETIC for 4 years. I was on the board of ETIC previously to that for 4 years. This is not my first time speaking in front of most of you in regards to these types of investments. It was determined about 3 years ago that ETIC needed to change. The Oregon University system was changing, the economy was changing, and although ETIC did a tremendous amount of good, even how we were interacting with the schools were changing. So before you, I believe on Monday, you had a discussion regarding the HEC bill of the splitting of the existing ETIC budget into two sections. One section at $24.5 million will go to the HEC for long-term control and investment back into those institutions and into those programs. And then $6.1 million was essentially left over for ETIC to continue to operate. ETIC board being in a remarkable gesture of doing what's right and not what's best for themselves, decided they wanted to expand this into other areas than just the high-tech sector in Portland. So that is where the OTC came from. We are essentially voluntarily killing ourselves, so to speak, in the hope that the birth of the OTC will eventually be able to carry on the same type of work, but in a broader area and certainly across the entire state of Oregon. The key point to know about the OTC and differences than ETIC is that the investments for the OTC will be one-time monies. These will be not sustaining dollars. They will not go for the long-term support of faculty. This is critical because that is how ultimately an investment fund becomes just a sustaining fund or a sidecar funding model. Instead, these are going to be used as greenfield dollars just to start up, build labs, build buildings, help hire packages, hire faculty, but not to support them. The other critical thing to understand about this is the leverage that industry brings to this. Traditionally, ETIC has always required that private dollars are matched to the state dollars. Federal dollars are matched to the state investment. So whatever investment you choose to make, I can tell you will not be just that much money going to better the state of Oregon. It will be multiplied at least by two, if not three, by the time it actually hits the streets. My understanding, the Amendment 84, I read through it. I did not see that. I read the LFO's analysis. I think everything looks very solid in regards to the overhead and the cost of carrying the program. I can assure you that one thing that the industry doesn't allow is to have too much in the way of extraordinary overhead costs associated with doing business. I hope that whatever investment you choose to make today, we can come back 2 years from now and show you what we did with the money and be in a great position to ask for additional dollars at that time. If you have any questions at this time, I can certainly answer any policy questions associated with how the council would act, spend the money, or otherwise invest. And I believe Lisa Neisenfeld from the Oregon Employment Department is in the wings to answer any agency questions you might have.
Okay, thank you, Eric. Senator Roblin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I had a couple questions and I got lost in my materials, but the big issue is, and I like this idea. Mm-hmm. I think it's the right thing to do. I want to make sure that we're always looking outside of the group that's on the board to look at other opportunities for high tech. I mean, I think you mentioned it, and I appreciate that. We have an amazing new high tech industry in biomedical stuff right now, and
exactly.
You know, I don't want to lose the opportunity to have some of the stuff going in those areas. But as time goes on, the thing that's amazing about high-tech industry is they morph into other and new things.
Absolutely.
And we would hope that this board is always looking and adding people in who have expertise in some of those areas so that we don't lose the market advantage that sometimes comes from the being on the edge. And I worry about things not... A group gets in, they start doing their thing, they like
Absolutely.
Making sure their thing is successful and not seeing that these others may be really great for Oregon. And if it's really going to be a talent search issue, it needs to be there.
Yeah, Senator, you're exactly right. And in the testimony in the committee, the higher ed committee, that's exactly what we heard. Industry coming to us saying, we need to be much more targeted. There's much more, there's such a potential out there, and there's various makerspace, you know, work going on within the metro area now, but that also is being exported to other parts of the state as well, to Baker, to down to your neck of the woods in the southwestern part of the state. But I just wanted to highlight just two statements in the bill that I think are really important, and I think they dovetailed what you're talking about. But it says, all investments in public and private institutions shall be contingent upon performance-based contracts with measurable outcomes and of limited duration. So these are not supposed to sustain something forever and ever. We're going to get in, we're going to get out, and we're going to expect a return on that investment and something to show for it in a very targeted short period of time. So it's an entirely different way of using the public resources than we have in the past, and we were with e-ticket prior.
A follow-up?
My only concern about that is, and I agree exactly with that idea, but some of these take a while. I mean,
oh, sure.
We the Nike and the other investments and the in things like cancer research and other kinds of things, they aren't going to show results instantaneously. But they do need to understand that there's individuals in there that are in this high-tech technology area that are adding value to that whole work. And you may not see the outcome in a real short time, but when the outcome comes, it's going to be remarkable because we've already seen some of that. And if we'd waited at the beginning and not watched for the development, we might have not seen it as a success that it has turned out to be.
Senator Roblin, co-chair Monroe, co-chair Comp. I completely agree. Your concern is well-founded. I can assure you that one of the reasons that we're putting such a limited scope on the investment window is to make sure those ideas that are good have a consistent and constant forum to come back and make additional pitches and additional asks, and those that are not performing have a really solid place to die. And that is something that's relatively unique in industry viewpoint, is that we're going to fail. Some of these investments aren't going to work. And the last thing we want to see them do is become permanent in somebody's standard budget, right? So ultimately, if for these to succeed, it's not going to just be our money or in the state's money. It is going to be about industry coming to the table with additional dollars. It's going to be about matching federal grants. It's going to be about an ecosystem to make these fly. When one is identified or more identified as being successful, I think it will be an excellent opportunity to have those groups with the benefit of OTC approaching the HEC and other organizations for long-term support and funding. Because when we do have success, it needs to be permanent.
Thank you. Representative Huffman?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Roblin brought up some great issues, a lot of stuff that we've talked about. One key point is the long-term investment. That's why I want to get on the record that, you know, this is a start, but it we desperately need to continue, and I would hope grow this every biennium, mm-hmm. because as we've worked on this concept, you know, expanding beyond or outside of ETIC, and I've always been very supportive of ETIC. It was a budget that we handled in transportation and economic development for a number of years that I was there. But maybe I'm unfairly characterizing, but ETIC, in my opinion, is fairly set in its ways, doing a good job mm-hmm. for what it is. But and so the Talent Council, in my vision, has the opportunity to break out of that and expand into bio and other areas. And one of my passions that I've been talking to Eric and Lisa and everybody about every chance I get is creating feeder programs, mm-hmm. some with our community colleges and other partners that could be out there feeding into whether it's OHSU, whether it's OIT or OSU engineering programs, but we have a need for these feeder programs in a lot of different areas of science and technology. So anyway, great bill. Hopefully it gets good support now and into the future.
Senator Roblin.
And just to go on that, I hope that as they're looking at town search, they are also looking, this is just on me, I have a number of brother-in-laws and people who are in high-tech stuff, and there are a lot of transferable skills. And so making sure that we capture as we add these new deals, I mean, they'll take some of these programmer people, and they're programming one day for this, and the next day for this, and the next day for this. So they have a set of skills that can be used. And then if with a little extra training, they all of a sudden see the next possibility. And oftentimes these things that really grow are things that grow because you did put someone who had a different way of looking at it in a position that said, well, did you ever think of this? And they said, nope, never did think of that, but that's a good idea. And I hope we, going along the same line, we start identifying those kinds of cross knowledge that help the whole system, and we get them embedded in our community colleges, and we get them embedded in other places, because it gives a bigger opportunity for them to make those breakthroughs and do other kinds of things.
Senator Roblin, co-chair Comp, and co-chair Monroe, one thing that I want to make sure is clarified is that ETIC was technology focused. The OTC will be industry market driven. So if you have a particular industry sector that is hot in the state of Oregon, the OTC will form a board to function and work on that sector. If a sector cools, that board is likely to shrink and or go away. So certainly high tech is very hot in the state of Oregon right now. We have thousands of openings in the city of Portland alone in computer science and across the state. But we also have major needs in the energy sector, healthcare sectors, advanced agriculture, advanced manufacturing, and all these sectors will be evaluated. One of the pieces that you asked about is the where are we going to get that information? That's one of the exciting things about being in the economic or the employment department is they're privy to job data and trending job data, as well as I believe you'll see out of this organization, unlike ETIC, use some outside consultants and resources to do some research before we decide how on the investments, as opposed to just relying on a small section of industry folks' opinion. So I think the money will be spent better. And you're talking to the guy that's been leading ETIC for the last 4 years. When I've been on it for 8 years, we're going to do even a better job.
This will be fun. My last one.
Okay, because we do have another bill to work at this morning.
I just want to say that I'm really happy to hear that. I think there are places, you know, we are one of the two test sites for drone technology in the country. We're pairing it with Alaska and us and Hawaii. There's going to be a whole nother group of jobs in agriculture and other kinds of things that they're really technology-driven. I mean, the maps that run them, all that kind of stuff. So I hope we're looking out, not just doing other things, because that one may not be ready for a couple of years, but it's going to need some help getting that next couple of years, and us to be the builder of all that new technology. So that was just a statement.
Thank you, Senator. Representative Huffman?
Quickly, I just want to encourage all of our colleagues to look toward the Oregon Talent Council, the Employment Department, and the Oregon Workforce Investment Board, because we're all connected and working on all these things. A representative sent me an email this morning talking about, it was strange the timing on it, talking about getting together on future legislation on a lot of the things that the Talent Council and OWIB are and will be working on. And so I passed the email on to Lisa and Andrea just a little bit ago to plug his thoughts into this, the process that's already, the framework that's in place. And I just want to encourage all legislators to work with the infrastructure that's in place on some of these things as we bring in bill concepts for 16, 17, and beyond, so that they're fitting into the work that's already had thousands of hours being spent on it.
Yes, thank you. Very appropriate advice for the future.
Madam Co-Chair, if I might, I think it's, I just want to take hats off to Eric for the countless time and effort that he's put into volunteering about something. He's passionate about technology and Oregon, you know, and I think it's just wonderful that we have people like this who come in to help us all as policymakers to make good decisions about how to invest public resources. So I'm looking forward to having a council full of more Erics to be making great decisions about how we can invest our resources.
Wow, it takes a village, and we've had a lot of support from a lot of places, but thank you very much.
Thank you, both of you. This is a issue that a topic that we'll be hearing a lot in the future. Okay, Lisa, did you want to come up and give us any comments?
Only if you need them.
Okay, if there's any questions.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to at that
work session. You ready?
Well, I'm going to close the public hearing and move to the work session. Yes, Senator. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2728. And open the work session on House Bill 2728.
Madam Co-Chair. I would move the A4 amendment to House Bill 2728.
The motion is to move the dash fours to House Bill 2728. Discussion? Objections? So moved. Mr. Co-Chair.
Madam Co-Chair, I move House Bill 2728 as amended to the full Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation.
The motion has been made by Senator Monroe to move House Bill 2728 to the full Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation as amended. Discussion? Objections? So moved.
And Madam Co-Chair, being a House bill.
Yes.
Representative
Huffman would like to carry that.
Sounds like it to
Since
me.
Since I've spent the last 4 years working on it, it'd be great.
Well, do you
I'm just saying.
Yes, Representative Huffman, did you have a suggestion or think there's an appropriate sponsor to testify on the floor?
A co-carrier?
Yes, that's what I'm trying to say.
Maybe Rep. Johnson. I don't know.
Okay. Well, we'll just put it as.
Is he as invested as you?
Almost. Actually, we could have tri-carriers. Reed Johnson. No, I was suggesting actually to full. I would carry it to full.
Yes.
And Reps. Reed and Johnson would be the best for the floor.
And you're not. And without you carrying it to the floor.
Yeah.
You want this on the Senate?
Okay.
I think that'd be the most appropriate mix.
Senator, do you have that, Krista? Mm-hmm.
Senator Thompson to the Senate floor.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, good.
And I close the work session on House Bill 2728. Thank you, committee. Good work. And Lisa, thanks for coming by to be available. I'm going to open the work session on our final bill for the day, Senate Bill 113, relating to higher education.
Okay. Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 113 requires the Higher Education Coordinating Commission to convene two stakeholder work groups. The first work group is to determine the most appropriate method for public institutions of higher education to report employment data. And then the second work group is to identify how each public university and community college calculate part-time faculty member hours to determine if a part-time faculty member is eligible for health care benefits. It also requires the Higher Education Coordinating Commission to submit several reports. The measure has a $106,500 general fund impact to the Higher Education Coordinating Commission for one limited duration 0.5 FTE to complete the work associated with the bill. We do have a proposed A5 amendment to the measure, which contains the same language as the A4 amendment, but it also has the appropriation for the limited duration position.
Questions for Krista?
Madam
You're
Chair.
Thinking hard.
Well, I see this as Senator Dembrough, and having worked with him on the Higher Ed Policy Committee for a number of years, I'm just some of the things you said, I thought we had already done over the years and put in place the reporting on making sure that a lot of the adjunct professors were getting the hours to get health care and some of that kind of stuff. Have we not addressed this previously?
I'm not familiar with the policy history. I could talk to you about the dollars. And I do know this bill was originally, it was one stakeholder work group, and it has been amended to add in more stakeholder work groups. So it has grown in its history.
We still have some issues, and that came to our committee in the Senate. And I'm going to go back. Part of it is how you track it, between multiple schools. There's a lot of people out there who are working in a lot of different community colleges, and they are almost full-time, but they're not getting any credit for any of it. So it was, how do we get a common system and also do some other things to acknowledge that some of these people should be getting some of these benefits? I believe that's what hasn't been done. We've done some other things with community colleges.
Follow-up?
So, Senator Roblin, this would be funding the continuation of that work group, do you think? Is that because what you just said was stuff that we've talked about
before, and I'm trying to remember, but I don't think that's exactly it. So let me go back here.
Yeah, Dana, do you have any background on this?
I'm just curious. 106,000 is, a lot of money, so I just want to make sure what we're.
Good morning, co-chairs Compton Monroe, members of the committee. For the record, Dana Richardson, Deputy Director for Legislative and Policy Affairs at the Higher Education Coordinating Commission. I couldn't give you a terrific summary of how this bill differs than existing statute, but I would note that it doesn't change existing statute. So I do think there would be some things that are already on the books that we're reporting on, and that this would broaden them, particularly with regard to the base bill and the reporting on the employee classifications.
And that's a big part is employee Senator. Classifications, getting them so that they align, so you're talking about the same kinds of things across the system, I believe.
Okay. Follow up.
I think one of the challenges we've always run into, and I don't know if the Senator's trying to eventually figure out a way around it, is that community colleges are a very loose system. They're not, they're all independent. And so if you have adjuncts working at three different ones, putting in 15 hours here, 15 hours there, 15 mm-hmm. hours there, and mm-hmm. putting on a lot of miles, and I sympathize with that. I'm not sure that we're ever going to come up with the magic answer that Senator Dembrough's wanting, because again, every session we bring this up to study it, and we keep coming up with the conclusion that there's 17 different community colleges, and so it's a challenge to view an adjunct professor as one employee of a system when there's not a system to do that with. I'm sorry to muddy the water here. It just was bringing back memories of previous
discussions. Similar kinds of things we've been working on. I think my understanding is they list in, I think it's section one, different kinds of things that they could try to categorize by, and part-time non-teaching professional staff, full-time supervisory employees, part-time supervisory employees. I mean, I think they're trying to get to that fits into all those things that we have in community colleges and others, and that's why they wanted to get this group together. That was part of my understanding.
Yes?
I'm going to give a courtesy yes, but I'm going to think about it before it gets to full, because again, $106,000 is a lot of money, and I'm concerned.
Okay, thank you for your observations.
Do you have a motion on that?
Not yet.
No, okay.
We're right there and ready, I think. Co-Chair Monroe.
Yeah, particularly in the Portland metro area where you have basically three community colleges all within commuting distance, PCC, Mount Hood, and Clackamas Community College, and we do have professors that teach at two or all three of those, mm-hmm. A class or two, so that when you add up their income, it almost gets to a living wage. I don't know how many of you know about how much adjunct professors get paid, but it's not very much. I've been an adjunct professor.
Yeah.
I did it for the fun of it, not for the money. And so, but in the Portland area in particular, where you have those three community colleges all within easy commuting distance of each other, it could be pretty significant.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Co-Chair Huffman.
Well, and Co-Chair Monroe, and he brought it up. I don't want any adjunct professor out there to think I'm right. speaking disparagingly. It's not that at all. It's just it goes back to the system that we're trying to do something in a system that there's not a system. That's my point. So I want to. Yeah. I agree. We've got some great folks out there that, you know, they're in a tough situation, and I get it.
And that's the problem, Madam Co-Chair. That's the problem this bill is attempting to attack. And
final words.
I'll talk to Dembro and have him get a hold of you, too.
Thank you, Senator, but you don't need to do that.
Okay, thank
Madam
you.
Madam Co-Chair.
Yes, Mr. Co-Chair.
Are you ready for motions?
Yes.
I move the A5 amendment to Senate Bill 113.
Co-Chair Monroe moves the -5 to Senate Bill 113. Any discussion? Any objections? Okay. Motion carries.
And I would move Senate Bill 113 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Co-Chair Monroe has moved Senate Bill 113 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation as amended. Any discussion? Representative Springer.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I'm going to be a no on the motion. When I was on this committee, on the higher ed committee, two sessions ago, I think it was, same kind of issue. I share a lot of the concerns that actually Representative Huffman voiced, and at this point, another work group with another price tag is not something that I'm good with.
Okay.
So I'll be a no.
Okay, thank you. Any other discussion? Okay, objections. Senator Thompson and Representative Springer, motion carries.
And his was a courtesy.
Yes, and for the record, Representative Huffman is a courtesy yes, and he's gonna investigate with the appropriate people to see how he wants to vote on the floor. Okay, carriers.
Why don't you let me carry this to the full Ways and
That'd
Means.
That'd be a good idea.
And Senator Dembro on the Senate floor.
And do we have Representative Taylor, Representative Smith Warner? Did you
sure.
want to carry Smith Warner? Okay, we'll carry it on the House floor. Okay, and committee, so that you remember or just kind of keep track of us on the full Ways and Means tomorrow and know that we're meeting. Oh, I got to close the work session. Closing the work session on Senate Bill 113, and that we will be back tomorrow sometime in the morning. And we look, what?
I think 10:30 is
what. Well, that's the goal. Yeah, that's the goal. But like I say, if we get into some really great discussions in Ways and Means, it might be a little later. Okay, we are adjourned.
We have about 20 bills on the agenda.
Perhaps if we get into some contra temp.
We have about 20 bills on the agenda.
Perhaps if we get into some contra temp.